want to welcome all of our listeners back to our year-end Hot Dish podcast, where we're going to do just kind of a little round robin with our great board of directors to talk about kind of where we are right now, what we're looking forward to in the new year, and maybe do a little bit of analysis on what happened in the last election. And so I want to kind of start out and ask my great friend and co-founder, Joe Donnelly, to maybe offer some words of introduction and give us a sense of what he saw from his vantage point in a very rural and red state of Indiana in this last election. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Joe.
Well, Heidi, thank you so very, very much. What I think we saw in the election is just, again, how critical rural communities are to the future success, not only of America, obviously, first and foremost and most important, but to the Democratic Party as well, that this election came down to, as we've been saying for a long time at One Country, it's going to come down to a lot of our rural communities and how well we do there. And so you go to places like North Carolina, places like Georgia, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, you know, rural communities in Arizona. That's where the rubber met the road, as they say. And so when we do well in rural communities, and well doesn't necessarily mean we have to win that county. It just means we had to do a little bit better. And people like Joe Biden, they felt comfortable with him. They knew that Joe is just regular Joe. And so those are the kind of things that helped to get him across the finish line. And I think just reemphasizes again, One Country for a while has been saying how critical the rural communities would be to the election. And it proved out exactly right, Heidi.
Yeah, and we're going to come back, Joe, and talk a little bit about kind of where we didn't do so well. I mean, I think we can all agree that when you look at the numbers, Joe Biden did better than Hillary, but the reality is that Donald Trump did better than Donald Trump in 2016 as well. And so, you know, the critical messages that we need to deliver aren't gonna get delivered and heard in one election cycle. Ashton, you represent the great state of North Carolina. We all had a lot of hope for North Carolina. I think some strides were made. Obviously, you were able to keep your governor, but maybe you can tell us from your perspective as a state legislator and really as somebody who is in one of those states that everybody's going to watch very closely moving forward. How do you think we did in rural America, and what do you see kind of moving forward for the great state of North Carolina?
Yes, thank you for having me on this conversation and for all the work of One Country through the past election here in our state. I think we saw in North Carolina a lot of what we saw across the country. We did better in some of our rural parts than we had in the election prior, though not good enough. And I think North Carolina remains a purple state. Donald Trump won in 2016 by about 4 percentage points, and then in 2020 by 1.5. So we did cut his lead down, even with record turnout of Republicans in our state. And we elected a Democratic governor and Democratic attorney general. But in our state legislature, we actually lost 4 seats in the North Carolina House. And so, you know, we are a state that has, like many of our states across the country, some urban centers and a lot of rural space and rural communities. And our party needs to continue to work to lessen the margins in some of our counties. And we're looking, you know, county by county and area by area, where did Biden make progress? And then we have counties where Trump, you know, increased his share of the vote as well. And we need to learn more about that. So I think we are reflective. We saw some good news, but overall, not enough good news and still much work to do.
So Ashton, I want to ask you, you know, we've been talking, Joe and I have been talking a lot about how Senate races, which used to not be national focus, You know, it used to be that a senator could get elected in Indiana and North Carolina without electing the president. We know now, other than Susan Collins, that again, that trend continued. However the state voted for the president, that's the party that's going to be represented in the election for the United States Senate. But coming from local and statewide or from the state house, can you give me a perspective on whether you think that these state elections and elections in legislative districts have become nationalized as well on many of these issues?
Yes, I think we do feel like in the past few years, the state legislative races and our state, you know, council of state, judicial races across our state are more nationalized than they have been in the past. And, you know, we elected Democrats as Secretary of State and State Auditor and Attorney General and Governor. So, like, it shows that that is not a done deal. But I do think much more than we would want, people voted up and down the ticket with a national mindset. And so that leads us to much work to do, I think, in communities like mine and across the country.
I do have to say that it is encouraging that you saw some split ticket voting. Not that we wanted anyone to vote for President Trump, but you saw some people who were willing to vote for statewide candidates in North Carolina that were Democrats and also voted for Trump, which is very rare, actually. And you saw in Montana, we lost the governorship in Montana. I think had Trump lost Montana, we would have picked up that governor's seat. But North Carolina has been running contrary to trend. But your governor also didn't do as well as what the polls were going to tell us he was going or told us he would do. So I think we have to analyze what that crossover voting actually looked like in North Carolina. Have you looked at any of that, Ashton?
We have, you know, we're waiting for total voter file updates before we are making conclusive decisions or thoughts, but we are looking at that. And even in my county, we have a district that's the same district, and we voted Democrat for county commission and Republican for school board. So, you know, we need to go and talk to those people and learn how and why they're making the decisions they're making. And then use what we learned to think forward. And the thing I was going to say is, you know, we are already looking at 2022 and the U.S. Senate race here. So the work, no rest for the weary, right?
Well, I think there's going to be a lot of competition for the primary, probably on both sides. And so you'll have a lot of enthusiasm. And I think a great opportunity, again, for those of us who at one country who really care about North Carolina and care about you in particular to know how we can be helpful in delivering a message that could maybe turn some of these counties around that Cal Cunningham lost by big margins and spend a little more time kind of talking the substance of the issues. Now, midterms are always tricky and we'll continue to take a look. I'm going to turn to JD. JD, when I watched the election returns, I watched two things. How was Biden doing and how were you doing? We had great hope. And obviously, the reality is that the likely opponent we thought you were going to draw, which was Steve King, who is a lightning rod for absolutely being out on the fringe, wasn't the candidate that you got, but yet you still did pretty well in your Northern Iowa district. What did you learn this time compared to the last time that you ran, and what kind of vision can you give us here at One Country going forward? Things that you learned that we might be able to expand on and improve on, and kind of make a difference in the next midterm.
Well, you've hit on a few points that I think I would like to focus on. Like when we talk about polling, and we had polling in the state and polling in our district that was drastically different than what occurred. And I think we got to figure that out, especially as a party, to figure out to see where we're at. I mean, the whole state of Iowa was hit by a Trump wave, and there are certain counties that I focus on. We have a Carroll County here, which voted for Obama in 2008 by 51%, and Trump got 68%. And we saw that throughout the entire state. And so, you know, the big difference between 2018 and 2020, we outperformed the top of the ticket in 2018 by 17%. And again, it was a different candidate. This time we still did by 5%, but it was completely a base election, where last time we had more of a persuasion election. And so what ultimately mattered was, were you on the side of Donald Trump or were you not? And that was pretty much it. And it was a rude awakening for Democrats here in the state of Iowa. And so we're trying to figure out in the state, Iowa Democrats are trying to figure out what's next. But then you look across the nation over 2018 and 2020, and a lot of our policies, whether it's Medicaid expansion in Nebraska, Idaho, and Utah, or marijuana in South Dakota, or workers' rights in Missouri, and then Florida with the $15 minimum wage, our policies are winning, but Democrats aren't. And I think we really need to do a deep dive into that.
Isn't that the truth? And it is so interesting. I think, like we've talked at One Country, when you look at which party has always been there for rural America, whether it is during the Great Depression, making sure that we're building an opportunity to save our soils and making sure that farm families are fed, whether it is taking a look at rural healthcare and critical access hospital investment. I mean, you could just go down the line, and these are all enormously popular things, but yet we just, and we run great candidates like you, JD, but yet we somehow cannot change the image that I think has become so negative of the Democratic brand. I want to bring Joe Donnelly back in because he and I had this experience in 18 on the branding issue. And we would both tell you that if you ask people to give positives and negatives about Heidi and Joe, the largest negative, always showing up like in big bright letters, was that we're Democrats. Not our policies, not our character, but that we have that label of Democrats. How do we overcome that, Joe?
That basically was it. And, you know, it'd be, boy, we sure love Heidi. Yeah, we love Joe. Yeah, he's of the wrong faith. You know, he's sitting, man. But here's the problem, I think, that as a party we have. You know, we want to take a look at how can we do police work in a more sensitive way, for instance. How can we make it so that these men and women in blue that we respect so much, that we make it so that they focus on the most important aspects of their job and say other parts of it, the parking tickets and all of that stuff, that it's done another place. Well, we come up with the genius idea to call it defund the police. And then that is used against every Democrat in the country. And so culturally, we can't turn away from who the friends and neighbors we have in rural communities are. They don't believe in that stuff. And we know that that's not true. That's not what that it's not true, the slogan, but that's what we hear. And so when the party as a whole is starting to think about how do we talk about issues, maybe we ought to think twice and do it in a smarter way. And for once, think about how this plays in rural America and how we can make it so that policies that rural America would appreciate and support are talked about in a way that they would appreciate and support rather another way. And so we have to... we have to look to meet rural America in a cultural way as well, Heidi.
Well, I totally agree. And I find it interesting, you know, President Obama has talked about kind of this that language matters. And the pushback has been pretty aggressive. And, you know, I been talking about how it's important that we look at getting things done. And the pushback I get is, well, you don't want to get anything done that we want to get done. And so I think, I mean, I don't know how we can continue to be a big tent, but yet communicate respectfully that many of the this language, you know, whether it's defund the police or, you know, eliminate all of student debt or whatever it is, student debt forgiveness, which, you know, is not going to sell in rural America. Many of their kids either went to the military so that they could afford college, or they didn't go to college and they wonder why they're paying for other people's college education. And so I think that there's gotta be, you know, there's a level of aggressiveness among kind of people who feel strongly about these issues. And God love them. Thank you. I mean, you're pushing the envelope, you're trying to do the right thing, but there isn't a lot of sensitivity to what that means to the Democratic brand in places that if they want to be able to ever effectuate these policies, they're going to have to start winning again. And so this is, you know, it's always interesting because the age old political kind of wisdom was you run in the primary at the left and then run to the middle. And I think that there is now an aggressiveness, and I probably get in trouble using that word, but there is now an aggressiveness on policy that means that if you want the majority, you're not going to get the majority. And so I think that it affects not, and that the thing that we need to think about is it affects not only rural Iowa, but it affects whether the North Carolina legislature has Democratic representation when you're in that really, really important year of redistricting. So how did you see kind of that Democratic brand, Ashton, in North Carolina? Are you still hearing it? Are you going to start hearing it again as it amps up for this open Senate seat that you have? How can you, Democrats in North Carolina, help define what the Democratic Party is in a way that will build back rural support for Democrats?
Yes, I think it's probably one of the biggest questions we're going to have to answer as a state and country. You all know as well as I do, lots of people will tell you, well, Democrats, quote unquote, need to do blank or blank. And it's difficult to, it's a huge group of people with all these different, you know, local organizations and statewide organizations. And so I think we are really going to have to look at where are Democrats doing well? And for example, Governor Cooper has been very focused, and I think people trust him at their core to do what's right for the people of our state. And as the elections have become more nationalized, you know, I was working the polls on election day. And that night, as it closed, and there was a pickup truck with several Trump flags and a man who was also working the polls as it was closing. And people would come out from voting and take their picture with the truck and the Trump flags and celebrate. And it really, I started to ask some questions and I realized that there's an identity tied to how people are voting right now. And so we can and should talk about the policies we care about, but it's more about the values and the identity of the people of our state. And we need to do a better job creating narratives that value the vast diversity of identities across our state and in the communities of North Carolina. And I hope that that's the work that we will be doing as we move forward and look at our next elections.
Well, I think North Carolina, again, is going to be in the center of a lot of national discussion. It is, in fact, I think, a purple state. And we want to know, Ashton, how one country and all of the people who support rural Democrats can help in North Carolina kind of carry that message. But I don't think you can overstate what you just said, that this became about, in many ways, about your cultural identity, kind of where you are, not about your economic interest or your kind of party loyalty. It was about your identity, who you identify with. And so, JD, I think you saw a lot of that in Iowa as well. But, you know, Iowa is so interesting because Iowa is a state that we're losing. You know, Indiana used to be a reliably blue state back when unions basically voted for Democrats. And then we saw Indiana turn. The question is Ohio become Indiana? And you know, as a farm belt state, you know, Trump or Obama won Iowa twice. And Trump now has won it twice. What do you think we can do at one country, but what can the National Democratic Party do to help build back a better opportunity for Democrats like you to win in Iowa again?
One thing that I saw, like when we talk about Obama winning this, he had 60 field offices in the state of Iowa. And this year we didn't do door knocking because of the pandemic. And it's just, it goes to show, like, we got to be present, and we're losing in areas, all types of areas, but we're specifically losing in a lot of the mid-sized towns, the 20,000 people towns, the 10,000 people towns that we used to win in. And I think we need to get back there. I think the other thing we saw from this election is it doesn't matter how much money you raise, you have to have something else to go with it. And we got to find a way to win. And with all that money, with the Senate races that was raised, Biden getting over $1 billion. In Iowa, all four congressional races, the Democrat dramatically outraised their opponent. And so we got to put the candidates in the best case scenario. And what we're seeing, what I would like to see is the roles a little bit more defined, because campaigns come and go. And we can't just rely on a field program that starts maybe in July and goes to November. And so I would like to see the DNC or the state parties really, and this takes a lot of money and we got to fundraise for it, but it seems like it's out there by what happened this election cycle. But we got to have year-round organizers. And that's something that I'm pushing. We have a election for the new Iowa Democratic Party chair coming up, and that's one thing I'm really trying to shape the conversation. And so that's one side of it. The other side of it too, I feel the amount of mis or disinformation that's out there. The majority of the largest radio stations in the state of Iowa have talk radio on it, and it's Rush Limbaugh, it's Sean Hannity, and it's local stuff too, and it's 6-8 hours a day of this stuff, and we just don't have a counter to that. And all the content that you're seeing on Facebook, the top 10 things that are shared most consistently are pretty right-wing things on a daily basis. And so I think those things need to be addressed too, because we look at a district like the 4th District, we're actually the number one district in America that people are engaged on Facebook, both Democrats and Republicans. And so those are some of the things I feel that need to be addressed. But I think the number one thing we have to do is have, as an organization, make sure we have year-round organizing.
Yeah, I think that there's going to be a lot of donors who say, we thought we were buying something different than what we got. Obviously, thrilled that Joe Biden is going to be the president. But, you know, that's against a backdrop of, in my opinion, somebody who historically will be seen not only as the worst president, but the most dangerous president we've ever had. So it's not like we were running against someone that behaved in a way that challenged us to find differences. This clearly was a person who was incredibly polarizing. Now, whether that works, Donald Trump, whether that works both on the positive and the negative, if Donald Trump's not on the ballot, do people show up? If Donald Trump does a rally in North Carolina for whoever is the Republican candidate for North Carolina Senate seat, the open Senate seat, does that mean that Trump can kind of have that influence the way he did when he was in office? It's going to be really challenging and interesting. But I want to reiterate and refocus attention on one thing that you said, JD, and that is we have to keep organized. I mean, if there is one part of the political system in the Democratic Party that is starving to death, it is our state party organizations. It's the groups that should be, you know, kind of putting together that kind of effort, being out there kind of aggressively talking about what Joe Biden's doing. That'll be great for Iowa or North Carolina or Indiana, you know, really being that spokesperson, that political voice. If you don't have that organization out there and you think it's all going to come top down, it's not. And all the money in the world, and we can all look at that. Cal Cunningham had more money than what he needed. Look at Sarah Gideon up in Maine. She ended up, I think, with like $12 or $14 million more in her campaign coffers. And none of that mattered. And so we're in a different time that needs a different kind of evaluation. And I couldn't agree with you more that that organization that's going to be the voice out there now promoting Joe Biden's practices that are going to be great for rural America. You know, that voice needs to be out there, and it needs to be out there clearly. I did a lot of talk radio in Iowa, for Joe Biden, calling into the radio stations, and got a fair amount of pushback on being a Democrat. But I think the fact that I could kind of talk about issues as talk about the concerns of American agriculture from a Democratic perspective and have it resonate with these conservative journalists is something. It can't be a one-off. It can't be just an election year. It's got to be repeated and repeated, and that takes resources. And so, you know, if we have any donors listening, you know, think about kind of that next investment that people are going to make and where that investment needs to be. But to me, the critical part is exactly what you said, JD, and that is building. If we're going to build back better, let's build our party back better. Because in many places, it has been decimated, and you're not going to have the motivational glue that came with Donald Trump. Exit polling tells us that a lot of people voted for Joe Biden, not because they were particularly interested in his policies. They just could not abide Donald Trump. And so, we have to have that evaluation. So I think, Ashton, if there is something that we can do for North Carolina, from the perspective of one country, you know, we obviously spent some time with your young people. We're really proud of the work that we did there, One Country Fund. But what if we were going to do something in the next 4 months, what would you tell us to do?
I think our first thing we're going to be working on, and you all have great insight, would be to really look at the data about what happened at a pretty granular level in different communities across North Carolina. So I think that's our first step. And the second, which you all did one of, but I would love to see more, is we really need a lot of focus group listening sessions, particularly with rural and ex-urban voters who voted for Donald Trump and Roy Cooper, so that we can learn more about what is able to break through in those communities to inform how we have our U.S. Senate races and state legislative races and other races that are coming up in 2022. And the third piece is what JD was referencing. We had in our House caucus, we had more financial resources than we've ever had, and it turned out not to be enough, and that we need those because we have to communicate, and we need to be saying, what else do we need to do? And I really think there is a lot to JD's point about long-term organizing in some of these communities and, you know, sitting at the Piggly Wiggly and listening to what people care about on a regular basis, not the month before the election. And so I think that those are kind of the three-pronged things that we're really pivoting to here in North Carolina.
Well, and I think also, what I'm going to say is we need to do that Ashton. We need to have those conversations. Then we need to communicate those conversations to, you know, kind the people who control the Democratic brand nationally, and say, this is what we're hearing, that the great ideas that you have are not being translated or communicated as great ideas. They're being communicated in a very negative way. We've got to change how we message what we want to do for the country, because if you believe as I do, and I think that every poll will bear this out, that the Democratic policies are actually favored by the vast majority of people in this country. So why aren't we winning elections? And you could say, oh, we're not running good candidates. Oh, of course we're running good candidates. I will tell you, we ran great candidates. And so there is some real soul searching about that brand issue that we have, so that not only can we have a conversation locally, and people are willing to listen and consider voting for a Democrat, but that so that we can, in fact, get a governing majority to implement these great ideas. And so we're going to, over the next couple months here, take a deep dive at One Country on what happened, be very, very honest about where we didn't do as well as what we thought we should have done, what we need to do in order to kind of reintroduce, as I've said in the past, the Democratic Party to rural America and rural America to the Democratic Party. It's a two-way street. Hopefully, as we build out for the midterms, we can see a real opportunity to keep the House in Democrat control, so that Joe Biden can implement so many of the really important policies that he's advancing for rural America, but also build a governing majority in the Senate. But more importantly, give hope and opportunity to those local Democrats who are fighting so hard for our party, who, you know, the easiest thing in the world would be to throw up your hands and say, I'm not doing this anymore. They're not getting paid. And if they were, they weren't getting paid enough. The idea would be to give them a reason to go out and tell people that they're Democrats and why they're Democrats, and not be put in that corner of having words put in their mouth because of what the national party leaders are saying. So we're going to continue to have this conversation at One Country. I want to close this out by saying how one of my great joys since leaving the Senate has been meeting all of you, has been able to lead with Joe Donnelly this effort of One Country, and to make believers out of some people that we can, in fact, change outcomes. But we've said all along, it's not going to happen in one election cycle, and we're going to continue to be on the team to build back better. But that involves building back the Democratic brand better. So thanks so much, JD. Thanks so much, Joe. Thanks so much, Ashton. You guys have a very, very Merry Christmas and a very Happy New Year. And keep involved and keep communicating what we can do, because I think if there's two places in particular where we can, in fact, make progress, it's in Iowa and North Carolina. And it is so important, especially JD, that you continue to work with us as a board member, continue to help lead the rural effort in Iowa, and Ashton, that you continue to bring that voice of local politics and what your state House of Representatives and Senate need in order to, as Democrats, in order to help build your opportunity for Democratic leadership in your state. So thanks so much.